open a book and it invites you to fall in.
That was my North Star. I always sailed towards that star.
Everything that he did it so amazingly and with such strength and with such patience and with such grace that it was just an absolute joy.
Welcome to the National Writer Series on Interlochen Public Radio. I'm Doug Stanton. As a child, Murray Howe assumed his father, hockey legend Gordie Howe, was just a normal dad, until one day at school in second grade.
My teacher handed out a periodical, My Weekly Reader, and my dad was on the cover. And I said, well, that's kind of weird. So I went home and said, Dad, you're on the cover, you must be famous. He said, oh, they probably didn't have anything to write about that week.
Murray Howe is the youngest son of Gordie Howe, who spent 25 seasons playing for the Detroit Red Wings. Unlike his father and two older brothers, Murray Howe never worked as a professional athlete. Instead, he became a doctor, practicing sports medicine. Murray Howe's memoir is called 9 Lessons I Learned from My Father. He talks this hour with Ron Jolly, author and radio host for WTCM News Talk 580. Jolly asked Howe what it was like growing up in an athletic family.
Well, my brothers always kidded that I was adopted because they were kind of superhuman like my father. My brother Mark was the youngest player ever to play on an Olympic hockey team at the age of 16. Came back with a silver medal, which I used to wear around whenever he was gone. And my brother Marty was an All-American football player as a freshman. He was 210 pounds and 6 feet tall as a freshman in high school. And just an amazing athlete. So I had big shoes to fill between them and my dad. And of course, my mom was so accomplished in the business world. And then there was me. So I was trying to figure that all out.
And you grew up, your boyhood was mostly in the Detroit area?
Yes, grew up in Lathrop Village. And we used to come up to Bear Lake near Grayling, and we actually got several Bear Lakers, the Omers, in the audience. And actually, I think I know everybody here tonight, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
A lot of friends and family. But yeah, so we've been coming up north since 1965, and just have fallen in love with it.
When did you start playing hockey? What was it like to be a son of Gordie Howe, because I don't think back then there wasn't a lot of opportunity for girl hockey players. When did you start playing hockey?
Pretty much as soon as I was out of diapers. At 2 years old, I was down at Olympia Stadium and skating. My dad would just gave us a chair, and in fact, there was actually a photograph of me in my early days learning to skate. Just hand me a chair and said, go. And then I said, and I went. And that's what happened.
So you basically put the skates on, held onto the chair, and figured it out.
Yep. So literally 2 years old, I started skating, and that's all we did in the Howe household. We had hockey equipment everywhere, and the walls were decorated with trophies and hockey paintings and hockey pictures. So that's what we did. And I thought I was supposed to be a pro hockey player because that's what everybody did around my house. And tried out for Michigan, of course, got cut. And so then I had to figure out what I wanted to do in life, so.
Yeah, but you discount your hockey career, but to get to that level, it's a level not a lot of people get to. I mean, what was the league you played in before U of M?
Well, I played Junior B hockey up in Toronto, so I played with Gretzky and Paul Coffey. Yeah, but I would say I was the worst on the team, they were the best on the team, but I was still on the team at least, and
So if you read the book, your career, so to speak, stopped growing at the University of Michigan. Can you tell us a little bit about how that happened, what you felt like, and what your parents' reaction was?
Sure. So I was really crushed. I mean, I had dedicated my entire life to being a professional hockey player, and so when I got cut from Michigan, all of my goals, all of my dreams pretty much collapsed right in front of me. And I thought, wow, what am I going to do now? And I wanted to wish the boys in the dressing room good luck, but I was so choked up, I couldn't even talk. So I just wrote on the board, good luck, guys, and then walked out of the dressing room and walked back to the dorm kind of in a daze. Like, what am I going to do now? My goal, my dream is just, boom, just exploded. And so I called my parents back at the dorm and said I got cut, and they said, well, thank God we don't have to worry about you anymore. So, and that took the pressure off, and it opened up the doorways for me to really pursue my other passions and talents, which ended up being sciences, and I did love to write. I did a little bit of that in college as well, and it was really a silver lining for me, because that's when things really took off for me academically, because I didn't have to skate 4 hours a day.
Did you feel pressure from your dad or mom or brothers to be a hockey player?
Not at all. I think the pressure really came on myself, just being in the Howe family and wanting to live up to all that was, and wanting to be so much like my father, that's kind of, you know, what I was trying to do.
I think there's a story in there about being in a locker room with Gretzky after a game, and when you guys must have still been in school in Toronto, and the guys are whining about the finals. And how did that conversation go?
Yeah, so Wayne was not a big fan of school, he said the only paper he ever got an A on was his essay on Gordie Howe when he was growing up. So all the boys in our dressing room are just talking about their finals and how they all got decimated, and I wasn't saying anything because I did very well in my finals, and so Gretzky turned to me and said, "How'd you do on your finals?" So I said, "I did okay." And he goes, "Well, what's okay?" I said, "Well, I got an A+ on all my finals." And he says, wait, what? In English, you got an A+ on your English final?" I said, "Yeah." And he says, "What are you doing here? If I could get A's in school, I wouldn't even be out here."
Amazing.
Which was amazing to me.
That's amazing that he said that.
Yeah.
When did you realize growing up that your dad was a superstar celebrity who kind of belonged to the world as much as your family?
You assume when you're growing up that everybody's like your parents. So I assumed everybody's dad was a hockey player, and that's kind of what you did. And it was actually in second grade, I believe, my teacher handed out a periodical, My Weekly Reader, and my dad was on the cover. And I said, "Well, that's kind of weird." And all my classmates are asking me, why is your dad on the cover of the?" I said, "I don't know. So I'll go ask him." So I went home and said, "Dad, you're on the cover. You must be famous." He said, "Oh, they probably didn't have anything to write about that week." And then the following summer is when they had Gordie Howe Day up in Saskatoon in his hometown. And there was a big parade, and they named a park after him, later a bridge after him, and they had the marching bands and the whole shebang. So that was when I kind of clued in that, wow, maybe he's something different than most people.
Well, one of the chapters is Be Humble, one of the lessons. So you'll learn about Mr. Hockey, who just blew that stuff off, any of the fame or recognition. When you were a kid then, I mean, in Lathrop Village, did you have buddies that always wanted to come over to your house because Gordie Howe was going to be there?
Well, they did. Plus, we had a pool, and my mom always had lots of great food. So everybody was at our house, and Dad was so accessible. It was just, you know, he'd be out there digging in the garden or raking or, you know, sweeping the driveway. So anybody that came over wanted an autograph. You know, he would not only sign an autograph, but he would show them how to shoot a shot, or he would, you know, get them in a headlock and elbow them, and you know, he would just have fun with them. So it was it was a highlight of everybody's day, really, to come over to our house.
And it'd be Gordie Howe raking the lawn or something.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
Also, I remember from the book, though, you think of Gordie Howe as the superstar, and you think of superstars today, what kind of life they may live. But you write about your dad and your mom, the generosity they live by, or the philosophy of always giving back. And I don't know if you can share an anecdote or that, but you said your dad was the guy that would go to somebody's house for dinner or to some event, and he would help bust the tables. He'd clean the tables or do the dishes if he had to.
Absolutely. Dad was really good at, he did so many things so well, but a lot of it was planned and being prepared. So I never saw him late for any event in his life. He would show up way early, and then he would help people set up the event, set up the chairs or whatever. And if he was a guest at someone's home, he'd show up a little bit early, not too early, but just early enough so he could help them with cutting up vegetables or whatever it was. And he would always be the one to clear the table and do the dishes afterwards. And of course, you couldn't get in there because he'd elbow you out of the way. But it was just such a wonderful lesson for all of us that, that he's the first to jump in and help.
You write about your dad at a gas station, service station, the old-fashioned service station where you would, it'd be outside the car while the gas was being pumped, and he'd clean the windshield on the car while he was waiting, and then go and clean the windshields on the other people's cars.
Absolutely.
Here's Mr. Hockey cleaning your windshield.
Yeah.
Did you go to, and I don't know if you have, did you bring your book up here?
I did. I've got it right here.
Well, I think you have a section you can not only tell us about but read, but you got a chance as a kid to go to work with Dad. Didn't have take your kid to work day back then, but imagine going to Olympia with Gordie Howe.
Like most sons, I would have loved my father no matter what he did for a living. But not every son gets to see that the rest of the world admires his dad nearly as much as he does. Nowhere was this more obvious than at Dad's second home, Detroit Olympia Stadium. I was fortunate enough to be able to ride down to the arena with my father on occasion. He'd always arrive several hours before game time. He loved being early. At the Olympia, he'd take the time to talk to every person he ran into, beginning with the parking lot attendant. "Hey, Gordy," called the attendant, his face lighting up the moment he saw my dad's big grin. The attendants always offered to park Dad's car, and he always declined. He would rather carry his car than have someone else park it for him. He hated having anyone do anything for him. If a hotel porter tried to grab his suitcase from him, the poor fellow would receive a solid elbow to the ribs. Dad would carry his own bags, but tip the porter anyway. We typically entered the Olympia through the main door, avoiding the secret back entrance where players could duck the crowd. The police officers working the game were among the first to greet him. "Hey, Mr. Hockey, how's that elbow?" they would joke. "I don't know, you tell me," was my dad's usual response. Then he would graze past them, dragging his elbow across their faces as he went. Who else could get away with that? I'd follow in Dad's huge wake, and Detroit's finest would give me a wink or a thumbs up. All the Howe kids were so well known at the stadium that we breezed right past the police and the ticket takers. Once we were inside the arena, everyone was so excited to be around him, it was electrifying. That charged my father right up. The hot dog lady would say, "Gordy, how about a dog or a Coke?" Dad would chuckle, "Maybe after the game." Fans recognized him instantly. There'd be an endless stream of, "Hey, Gordy," or "Here comes Mr. Elbows." Dad always acted like it was the first time he'd ever heard that one. Once he'd made it to the dressing room, he'd slowly undress, painstakingly folding or hanging each article of clothing and placing his shoes in perfect parallel in their little cubby. He'd then take forever to don his equipment, retape his stick, and sharpen his skates if they weren't exactly to his liking. Even if I had never seen him step out in the ice, he would be a legend in my eyes. He's who I wanted to be. I still pinch myself at the realization that he was my father. How many sons are genuinely excited to ask their fathers for an autograph? The older I got, the more my awe and admiration of him grew. He was as huge as I am compact, as legendary as I am ordinary. Perhaps the only things I inherited from him were his nose and his sense of humor. Yet I always considered myself blessed beyond measure. I remember those python-sized arms scooping me up in the back seat of our car in the wee hours of the night after a game and delivering me delicately into my bed when I was about 6 years old. I remember faking sleep because I wanted him to carry me. The same juggernaut who had just dazzled thousands of fans with his ferocious power and grace was the one gently tucking me into bed.
You will discover as you read the book, Gordy was number one dad, and I think a lot of lessons can be learned by readers for parenting there. But how did he stay consistent in your lives and have a positive influence? When he was on the road, I would guess a good 60, 70, 80 days a year?
Yeah.
Yeah. How did that work around the house?
I think for my dad, he was so grateful for everything he'd been given. My grandmother was just an absolute angel and such a wonderful role model for him. And there were so many other people in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, that were so good to him that allowed him to be able to have his hockey equipment and be able to do all the things that he needed to do to be able to play hockey. And he spent the rest of his life really paying it forward, really giving back to everybody that he met for everything that he'd received when he was young. And that carried over really into being a father. He wanted to give all that he had to each of us. So the moment he stepped in the door, he was present. He was there. He was there for us. And if he had a job to do, he would invite us to do it with him. And it was always fun. It's like having a superhero, you know, right in your own house. When he'd be working on some project where he's using a hammer and you're just watching this Thor with a hammer just smashing something in. And everything that he did was so amazingly and with such strength and with such patience and such grace that it was just an absolute joy. We would go to the grocery store. We loved going to the grocery store with him because he would start doing magic tricks for all the kids in the line. If there was a long line, everybody would be complaining, and he's doing magic tricks for everybody and hanging the kids upside down by their ankles, kids that he didn't know. And so he made every moment special, and it was such a privilege to be around somebody like that.
Who ran the household? And I mean, what role did he play in the household? Did he do a lot of work around the house, handiwork, or what was that like?
Mom ran the household. Mom ran the household, which was great. And Dad wouldn't have it any other way. She was the boss. She orchestrated and organized everything, planned everything. And whatever she asked him to do, he would do. So he was the worker bee and the workhorse, really. And he loved that role. So anything my mom wanted to do him to do, he would do. In the home, he loved to make beds. He loved to clean up in the kitchen. He didn't do the laundry, but he would fold the laundry. He loved to fold things. And I don't know why. But he didn't cook. He would grill. He was a great griller, but he'd never cooked anything. I don't know again why, but I think he figured Mom could do that much better than he, so he didn't even want to mess around with it. We would starve. It was just my dad, around there at home. We'd have to make sandwiches. But he loved to do any house chores. That was a joy for him.
Well, that'd be a great photo, though, if you had Mr. Hockey folding laundry, that'd just be so great. So I want to just find out a little bit about, I don't want to give the whole book away here, but these are tidbits and stories, and the book is chock full of these that help tell the nine lessons here. Your dad came from humble beginnings. What was his childhood, his upbringing like?
He was raised in Depression era Saskatoon, where it's 50 below most of the winter. They really didn't have two nickels to rub together. And yet he would say that even though it was such a challenging time to grow up and a challenging place to grow up, he would say that he had the best childhood ever. Because he was able to still do the things that a young boy might like to do. He could go swimming in the South Saskatchewan River, jump off the Grand Trunk Bridge and drop 60 feet into the water. He could go fishing. They had prairie dogs up there, which the farmers didn't like because they would dig holes and the horses would break their leg by stepping in the hole. So he could hunt prairie dogs and get a penny a tail, which was like a king's ransom for him. So he spent his summers, hunting prairie dogs and swimming and fishing and doing all that kind of stuff. And of course, working hard on their farm, but that was a part of the gig.
So he got tough and grew strong in that upbringing. I think you have, how did Mr. Hockey start playing hockey? Or first, you have a story about his first skates.
I'm glad you asked.
Oh, how?
Whenever we went out to eat with friends, Dad always grabbed the check, unless a fan or another guest hijacked it first. He usually wasn't content to stop there. Mom and Dad both loved to look around the restaurant for random people or families and pick up their tab anonymously. This brought them sheer joy. They would wait around to see the recipients' faces when the server informed them that their bill had been paid. It was a wonderful lesson for me on the joy of giving. One afternoon, when Dad was visiting the Baskin-Robbins, where my brother Marty worked, an entire baseball team streamed in. Not only did he sign in every uniform, but he also treated the whole dugout to ice cream. Dad left with more than just ice cream that day. He left a priceless impression on every one of those young men, and that's how generosity works. You always come away with more than you give. If it weren't for that kind of generosity, there might never have been a Mr. Hockey. Back in the Depression, when my grandmother, Katie, was a young mother, a neighbor appeared at the Howe doorstep. Her husband was ill and unable to work, and the woman had no money for milk for her infant. No one had much, certainly not the Howes, but this poor soul had even less. Still, she didn't want to beg. She was carrying a burlap bag filled with whatever her family could spare. She was offering it all for sale, for whatever grandma could spare. My grandmother scrounged together all the money she had, which was $1.50, plus a bag full of food. The woman was eternally grateful and handed over the burlap sack. When Grandma Katie dumped it out, she saw it was mostly junk, except for a pair of hockey skates. According to family lore, Dad had to fight his sister Edna for ownership of those skates. But once they were his, the seeds were sown for the greatest career in the history of the game. Dad was 6 years old. He wore those skates for the next 4 years straight. Mm. Incredible how the good Lord repays kindness exponentially.
All right. That's 6 years old is a late start for a hockey player, isn't it, in Canada?
It's a very late start. Before that, of course, he actually would be out on the ice with the other kids. He would just be in his boots, and they would stick him in net because he was big for his age and could cover a lot of net. And but it's pretty hard to play goal without any skates. And so he was thrilled to be able to finally have skates like the rest of his peers.
I want to tell a quick story. Because when I found out Murray was going to be here and this book was out, how many people have heard of Casey Cowell in our audience? Okay. So Casey lives in Traverse City now. When he was 23, he started with $200 a tech company. It's back in the 70s. And he started to think, what if the keyboard could type messages to the computer and the computer could share that with other computers? Radical idea. He went on, and their company was U.S. Robotics, is what he started when he was 23. They were the largest manufacturer of computer modems and other equipment. He eventually merged with 3Com, a $7.3 billion deal, which Casey walked away with a big chunk of that, and now lives in Traverse City. He's a philanthropist locally. And he's doing what he can to bring good companies to Traverse City for jobs. But anyway, when he tells his story, he's invited to be a speaker. He starts with hockey, and he starts with Gordie Howe, because as a kid, he played with your brothers.
Yes, he did.
Matter of fact, he played with Mark and Marty on the Rooster Tails or something?
Yep.
Two national championships. And he was the goalie. That's what made me think of this. He was Casey was the goalie. And the impact that Gordie Howe made on his life is huge. When I contacted him, I said, can I share a story? He goes, get the story of Gordie out. He's a great man. So he tells how he played youth hockey and the lessons he learned there. And he said after one game, he dragged out his equipment bag, and he had all, you know, hockey equipment bags are huge, plus his goalie pads are piled on top. And he stopped at the drinking fountain, put the bag down, and he said Gordie Howe was there. And he came walking by, and he had Mark and Marty's bags. And he put them under one arm, and while Casey was getting a drink, he reached down and looped his little finger through Casey Cowell's hockey bag. And he picked it up, the bag, the pads, and everything, and he looked down at Casey, and in his quiet way, he said his quiet, super powerful way, he just winked at him and said, pinky finger. And he carried all of it out to the parking lot. And Casey says, much larger than life. You just wanted to be him. You wanted to be with him. You wanted to be like him. And one other story, though, he said, Casey went on, applied for college at the University of Chicago. Highly selective admissions process. At the time, only 500 students per class. University of Chicago had undertaken to expand the character of its student body a little, and I was invited to come for an interview. Turns out my interviewer was a hockey fan. I was a good student, I had strong board scores, but all University of Chicago applicants were strong. So we talked a little bit about this, and that as the interview glanced through my applications folder, he stopped at a letter of reference. It was written on the letterhead of the Detroit Red Wings hockey organization, written on my behalf by Gordy. The interviewer held up the letter and asked, is this the Gordy Howe? I said yes, and I gave him the background, pretty much end of interview I was in. He said, that experience of being immersed in aggressive critical thinking and in an environment of so many brilliant people definitely changed my life. Thank you, Gordy. And said Gordy was truly remarkable, and encountering his character and his persona had a big, big impact on many, many people. He never left Olympia Stadium until he had signed every autograph. I was there many nights hanging out in the hallway. Can you imagine how many people that impacted and the example it set and continues to set? For me, he was the incomparable role model, still is. So there's a guy that went on to big things, but but as he said, true of so many people. What was your dad's philosophy, I guess, on that, you know, signing autographs everywhere he went, or getting out after a tough game? You probably want to just get home and see the family, get some rest, and you said he signed everything.
He did. For one thing, he just made sure the whole family was there anyway, so we were going to be there for the duration, so we would just sit off on the sides. I'd be running in a hallway somewhere, and Mom would be just there waiting for him. And actually, on occasion, I would just go over to just kind of be close to him, and then he would start handing all the autographs over to me to sign, and he'd say, you want his autograph, he's going to be the really famous one.
Yeah, that's right.
And so that was fun. That was fun. But he felt that he belonged to his fans, that he belonged to the team, to his teammates, to the referees, to his opponents, and to the fans, that he owed it all to all of them, that he, there would be no game without all of those components. And so he was committed to being there for every fan. So he would not leave until every autograph was signed. And so we would often be there till midnight. It would just be our family and the night watchman and the last fan that he's signing for. And it was pretty amazing. So we got to see the guard dogs at Olympia Stadium quite often. And people maybe not know that the Olympia used to have guard dogs that they'd release out after everybody, they locked the doors. And I asked my dad, I said, what happens like if they can't find one of the dogs in the morning or whatever? He said, good question, I don't know.
You're listening to the National Writers Series from IPR News Radio. Coming up, Murray Howe talks more about his father, Gordy Howe.
You're listening to the National Writer Series from Interlochen Public Radio. I'm Doug Stanton, founder of the year-long book festival held in the historic City Opera House in Traverse City, Michigan. Let's return to Ron Jolly's conversation with Murray Howe, author of Nine Lessons I Learned from My Father.
So what was it like to be a kid and you watch your dad score goals every night and the toast of the hockey world, Canada and USA? How many people know what a Gordy Howe hat trick is? A hat trick is when you score three goals. A Gordy Howe hat trick is when you score one goal, get an assist, and get a fight. So how did it feel to see your dad, as gentle and loving as he was and humble, go out on the ice and beat the tar out of somebody?
I was glad it was them and not me. Let him get his aggression out.
Yeah.
I was always so proud of him. Even though he was ferocious on the ice, he had a certain code of conduct and a certain way of dealing with things. He always had a sense of justice. Most of the time when he would hit somebody extra hard or fight, it was because they had done something to somebody else. And he was just basically letting them know that you can't do that to his teammates. He didn't have to fight much after the time that I was born, because early on in his career, he had a couple fights where he won the fight so convincingly that I think most people said, I don't think I'm ever going to fight Gordie Howe. So he really didn't have to, so he couldn't get many Gordie Howe hat tricks because nobody wanted to fight him for most of his career.
What the difference in, if you're not a hockey fan, it's the concept of fighting is foreign, but it does fit into the game. They don't fight today as much as they used to in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, early 90s. But the difference in the game when your dad played and scored all of those goals, and a few decades later when Gretzky played and scored all those goals, and today as far as your dad didn't really have a bodyguard, I think is what you said in the book. Can you explain the difference between that era and your dad's, what made it amazing that he scored so many goals?
Sure. One thing, it used to be much more of a defensive game. So, you know, the games were much more lower scoring. There was a lot of rivalry because you only had six teams. So everyone knew everybody's game plan. And it was just a little bit tougher from that perspective. There was a lot of rivalries that were built up. And I would say every game was just a little bit more intense maybe. Things are just different now. The players are clearly more skilled. They're bigger. They have more equipment.
Yeah.
The hits are much harder. So from that standpoint, it's different. But there's also a lot more finesse. It's a more wide open game. I think everybody that's in the game recognizes that people like to see goals. So you're seeing more goals scored. It's just more of a wide open thing. The high scoring players like Gretzky, because you have some extra large players like John Scott out there who could damage you. You needed to have a protector. If you're Wayne is an incredible hockey player, but he's certainly not a fighter. He's kind of, you know, maybe, you know, more like me in that way. And so he needed a couple guys to kind of, you know, protect him and give him that room. Dad didn't need that. He was, you know, you needed to protect everybody else from him. So that was a difference there.
So, yeah, it was amazing. I mean, because today's guys, finesse guys, all have a protector.
Yeah.
If someone hits them hard, they know they'll pay for it because their bodyguard's going to come out and make them pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
But people just knew Gordie was the whole package.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had the finesse, the speed, but he could stick up for himself and his teammates too. And maybe his sons, I don't know. Now, the wild thing I remember growing up was Gordie Howe retired from the Red Wings when he was, what, 45?
42.
For the Red Wings. Mm-hmm. And was, a 23-year All-Star and MVP, four Stanley Cups.
Mm-hmm.
Scoring leader, all kinds of records, and he retired. Why did he retire then from the Red Wings at 42?
Well, his wrists were basically a bag of bones at that point. He had had several fractures in the wrist, and I learned later in sports medicine that if you fracture a certain bone called your scaphoid bone in your wrist, you lose the blood supply, and that bone will collapse, and then your whole wrist will collapse. Abnormal biomechanics, and so his wrists looked like somebody who could not feel pain, and they just were just crumbled mush. And so he had to have an operation on both wrists, and they'd remove all these little bone fragments. And then it took a few years for that to heal. And I don't think he would have come back and played, but then when my brothers got drafted to play professionally with the Houston Aeros, he took the call and he said to Bill Dineen when I was staying there, he said, well, how about you want one more to play with you? And Bill thought he was joking, but Dad was not joking. So that was what inspired him to come back. And of course, He played another 7 years with his wrist like that, which is just
astounding. And productive years. I mean, he was a high scorer.
Sure, he was the MVP in his first year. They won the cup, and he was third in scoring. He would have been first, but he broke his ankle. So, anyway, yeah.
I mean, can you imagine playing with his kids? Can you imagine being a hockey player, and there's your dad. Here, Dad. So, but did he, how did he, I don't know if, I was too young to watch a lot of those games, I remember, but your brother, Marty, was a defenseman.
Yeah.
And I don't know, from the book, I just picked up a few things. Was he a scrapper or whatever? Was your dad ever around when one of your brothers got into a fight on the ice? And if so, how did your dad respond to seeing that go on?
Sure. You know, Dad would let the fight go on until one of his sons was losing the fight. Then he would step in. And Marty was pretty tough. I mean, he would scare the bejeebers out of me for most of my... And my buddy Lance, who's in the audience, he knows this as well. Marty... Well, I'll tell you a quick story that happened right up here on Lake Manistee. Marty had a beautiful yellow super-fast car, and he's driving along the little road on 612, and a couple boys about 12 years old were throwing pebbles at cars. I don't know why, but anyway, they were... threw a pebble at Marty's car, and he slams on the brakes, runs out of the car, leaves the car in the middle of 612. Lance and I are in the back, and these kids see, this guy's getting out of his car. They start to run. Well, Marty, he was on them in about 5 seconds and picked them both up like this and tossed them about 20 feet. And he did it about 3 times until they had lots of road rash. And then he said, "Don't throw stones at cars." And then he gets back in his car and takes off, and Lance and I are looking at each other like, ooh, I hope he doesn't, you know, do anything to us.
Yeah.
So Marty could take care of himself. He really was very tough, but there's a lot of big boys, you know, in the pros, and there was one time where a guy was on top of him and pummeling him, and so Dad came over and he said, "Get off of Marty," and the guy basically said some expletives, and so he said it again, and the guy said some more. So my dad basically took his fingers into the guy's nose and just pulled him right off of Marty. So whatever works, right? Yeah, whatever works.
Okay. Well, let me stick with hockey for a minute here. I want to get back to your family. How do you think Gordie Howe would have fared in today's NHL with the differences? I mean, what would it be like if Gordie Howe could come back and play in 2 days NHL?
He probably would have gotten suspended really quickly, I think. He would have adapted, of course, because he loved playing so much. He always just shaved the rules just enough. You know, he usually didn't get caught at whatever he did. So he would have adjusted to it, I think. I think he would have been phenomenal now as he was then.
Yeah, just different styles of the game there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How did, if your dad played today, they have salary caps today, so I think the top guys are getting, I don't know, $8-9 million, because mm-hmm. The team can only spend so much money, and your dad would be at that level, if not higher, but I don't know if you can comment on how was he paid back in the day, and did he have an agent? How would he negotiate a contract with, would it be Bruce Norris?
Actually with Jack Adams, the general manager.
Okay.
And coach. And so they had 1 year contracts only.
Wow.
And so you were, because there was only six teams and everybody in the United States and Canada wanted to play, there was no shortage of players. So anyone was thrilled to be able to sign a contract. And my dad, he just wanted his Red Wings jacket so that he could go back to Saskatoon and say, "See, I really played on the Red Wings, you know, at least 1 year." And that would go on year after year. His first 20 years, he had 1 year contracts, and he was thrilled. And Jack Adams would always say, "Good news, we're giving you a raise, 3%, you know, raise." You're the highest paid player in the NHL. You know, you're really lucky. And Dad says, "Great, thanks." And that was it. He never cared about the money. He never played for the money. He would play for free. My mom said, "Don't tell them that." He felt so fortunate just to be there. And in fact, in training camp, they never knew that they had their spot until training camp was over. So they didn't get to sign their contract till after training camp. So Dad played like he was playing for the Stanley Cup. Anyone who was on the right wing they were in big trouble because in the scrimmage, she would just put them right through the boards because they were vying for his spot. After the team was filled and he signed his contract, then he was nice to them. But until then, so it was a little tough. And it was only near the very end of his career that one of his teammates, I think it was Bobby Bond, that informed him that he was making twice as much money as my dad, and so were several other players on the team. And he said, I just want to let you know that. And my dad was floored. And it wasn't, again, about the money. It was the fact that that Jack Adams had you know, deceived him for his entire career. So he was crushed. So when he told my mom, she said, I'm going to be your agent from here on in. So she was the first woman pro agent. Mm. And that's why, because she could do it better. And so she went in there from then on and negotiated for him, and and it worked out well.
So he didn't get paid his true worth for a long time.
I mean, I don't think so, and yet, no. I mean, I see that as and I talk about that a little bit in the book, that I see that as a silver lining. You know, he had to have a summer job. He had to be out there, you know, with the fans because, you know, he needed the extra money. So it kept him hungry. It kept him humble. And we lived in just a regular, nice, you know, neighborhood. We weren't in a gated community or anything, and those were all good things that just kept us grounded as well. And so we had enough, but not too much. And I see that as a good thing.
Yeah. Your mom, Colleen, a little bit about her background, and then maybe how did Gordy and Colleen connect?
Yeah, so my mom came from very humble beginnings. My grandmother and grandfather met. He was a very talented, Howard Mulvaney was a very talented musician, and he came through town to a bar that my grandmother was working at, and they kind of had a short interlude, and my mom was the product of that. And my grandmother was, I think, 17 at the time, and she felt overwhelmed, couldn't really take care of my mom, so she gave my mom to someone we called Aunt Elsie, who was just kind of a friend who couldn't have children. So Aunt Elsie raised my mom in Sandusky, Michigan, and near the Thumb, and she just loved her to death, and they, again, it was on a farm, they didn't have much money, but she was loved unconditionally and grew up believing that she was a good person and that she could accomplish anything she put her mind to. And so, you know, she could also relate to the humble beginnings that my dad had. And my mom was one of the most positive people ever. And it was really amazing to me with such humble beginnings that she, you know, she was so thankful for all the blessings she had in her life.
And they met at a bowling alley.
The Lucky Strike. So
it was a
Lucky
that?
Strike
is that
for my
in
dad.
Michigan?
So that was in Detroit. Okay. So the Red Wings used to go. A lot of the players weren't married back then, so there was a lot of camaraderie there, a lot of buddy, you know, system there. And so they would go out after the practices or after the games and go bowling at the Lucky Strike. And my dad saw my mom, and he told me, he said, the second I saw her, I knew I was going to marry her. I was just head over heels for her. And he was so shy that he couldn't go up to her. So he went to the bowling alley manager and asked if he could introduce him to this girl. And so that's how he met her.
And carried a picture of her in the wallet?
Till the day he died.
Till the day he died.
Yeah.
You and I had an opportunity to meet your wife Colleen tonight, and your daughter Megan and her husband Doug, and terrific. They live, you know, already by the rules. They live generously and honorably and positively and selflessly. You had the opportunity to care for your dad, I think, in his last year?
Yes.
I say opportunity because there are a lot of people, baby boomers now, that are dealing with, you know, their kids are at some certain stage, still need care and money, but their parents are at a stage too, and it's a struggle for people. And the way you write about the time you spent with your dad, it just seems like it was a gift to you, or you handled it like that. Can you just tell, what was a day like? What did you do? Your dad lived in your house with your family, and what was that like?
It was phenomenal. I feel so fortunate that my wife, Colleen, offered to have my dad come and stay with us. She said, you know, he really, you know, we could make this such a great time for him. He's got all his friends here. We've got lots of family here. You know what he likes to do, and it'll be great. It won't be easy, but it'll be great. So I was very thankful that she did that. And so we wanted to make every day count. We just didn't know how long we would have with him. As it turned out, it was exactly 1 year to the day that he passed away after he came to stay with us. And it was by far the best year of my life. It was so, every day was so meaningful. And as you can imagine, taking this aging superhero out to be with his fans and to experience the adulation and the love of everybody, you know, that saw him. And thanks to the magic of smartphones, everybody could get a picture with Gordie Howe, and you could follow on Facebook where he was each day by all these postings. You know, he was able to dance with my daughter Megan at Doug and Megan's wedding. He was able to experience the announcement of the Gordie Howe bridge being built. And I mean, you just don't get that very often in your life, that somebody has a bridge named after them and they're still alive and can say, well, that sounds pretty good to me. That was his response. And one of the most moving events was in Saskatoon, they had a tribute to him in February of 2015. And Gretzky was there, Bobby Hull was there, the other Hull brothers were there, and Brett Hull was there. My brothers were there on stage, and I brought my dad up on stage. And he was able to just sit there and listen to everybody pour out their heart of what he meant to them. And be surrounded by 2,000 fans all just wishing him so well. And it was like being at a funeral where you're still alive and everybody can honor you. It was so beautiful. I thought, wow, everybody should do that. Everybody should have that opportunity in their life. And we are so thankful for that. And one of the neatest blessings of that evening was my son Corey, who didn't want to go to the event. He was very busy as a bioengineer, had a lot of work to do. I dragged him up there and said, you got to support your grandfather. And he falls in love with a Saskatoon girl that night. And they're getting married this summer up in Saskatoon. But I have a short excerpt of kind of a day in the life of Gordie Howe when he was with us in Sylvania.
Was he 80, what about this?
He was 88.
88.
88, yeah. And let's see, here we go. When we took Dad to the local rink, he'd stand for an hour or two in the freezing arena watching the kids skate around, never complaining of the cold. One time, a coach halted his practice and instructed his players to skate over to where Dad stood. The coach then hopped off the ice, asked Dad to stand against the glass with the team behind him on the ice, and voila, a team photo with Mr. Hockey. Dad then greeted the players one by one, clobbering them on the helmet with his oversized mitts as if to say, nice job out there. On one occasion, a coach was in the center of 100 or so players and their parents talking about the introductory hockey program. Dad walked slowly to the center of the circle and stood close enough to the coach to whisper in his ear, but said nothing. I wasn't sure what he was going to do. Elbow him? Down him with a left hook? But fortunately, Dad just stood there. The coach sensed a presence nearby, but he was so engrossed in his presentation that he had no idea who was standing next to him. The crowd loved this. Finally, the coach looked to his left and was at a complete loss for words. Then he regained his composure and he said, well, this gentleman obviously needs no introduction. The greatest hockey player of all time right here at Tam O'Shanter Ice Arena. The crowd gave him a warm ovation, then mobbed him for pictures. One of the boys in that group was named Gordie, after my dad. Dad was just as impressed with this 6-year-old young man as he was with my dad. Even after 2 hours at the rink, Dad didn't say, I'm tired, let's go. I had to make that call. After we got home, Dad could barely keep his eyes open long enough to brush his teeth and get his pajamas on. He was out in 20 seconds after his head hit the pillow. He said, thank you, Muzz. And that was that.
Yeah.
But you had a lot of intimate moments you reveal. I mean, you helped feed your dad, dress your dad, bathe your dad, and all of that for the final year. So probably a lot of extra stress or time, but you write lovingly about it. It's moving. I was going to ask Traverse City. So the Howes have this presence in Traverse City, the Gordie Howe Arena, the Gordie Howe's restaurant for a long time, which when that opened, I went, I think it was a press opening or a reception, and was packed inside. Mm-hmm. And I walked out front, and there's Gordie looking up at the sign. Gordie Howe's restaurant. It's like, it's me. And just a terrific guy. But what's your link? How did the Howe family get connected to Traverse City?
We've been coming up north since 1965, thanks to Bear Lake and our friends the Omers. And whenever we'd run out of things to do at Bear Lake, which wasn't often, or we would run into Traverse City and maybe catch a movie or go out to dinner, and we just loved hanging out in Traverse City. And eventually, my mom got the idea that they would buy a place here so that they could fly in and out of Traverse, and so they bought a home, first a condo on the west side of the West Bay, and then they bought a home on the east side of the West Bay, and it was fantastic. So Megan and all of our other children were able to come over and visit my mom and dad there in Traverse City, and they just loved it.
Well, it's good to have you up north.
Thank you.
The chapters, by the way, it's nine lessons that I learned from my father. Live honorably, live generously, play hard, but have fun. Patience, patience, patience. And Dr. Howe has a lot of patience. hesitation. live selflessly, be humble, be tough. Stay positive, and friends and family are like gold. Treasure them. And each chapter is it's a delight to read. I hope everybody will take a copy home and read it or pass it on. One of the quotes you have, we can't all be the best hockey player in the world, but we can all be great people. And that is one of the great takeaways. And as I said, I read it and I thought, I just forgot like Gordie Howe, my idol in hockey, and I just had a new idol, Gordie Howe the man. And so I'm glad that you brought these lessons forward. Could I get you to do one more reading?
Absolutely.
Because Gordie was a great family man, and I think that's what it's all about. And he's a tough guy too, and this story captured it for me. And I was going to ask you earlier, I said, when was the first time you saw your dad cry? And this story is demonstrates all the love Gordie had for his family and his wife, I think, for Colleen.
Memory is a priceless treasure. Over these past hours, I've relived 1,000 cherished moments. Just for a minute, I am 8 again. Mom sitting at the organ in our living room, lost in her own thoughts as she plays and sings MacArthur Park by Richard Harris. A hint of a tear forms at the corner of her eye as the song ends. Then she turns to me and smiles. I can see it's a tear of joy. It was the first time I realized Mom wasn't just there for me. She was a real person with feelings of her own. It's a stirring experience, coming to know someone you love more deeply. I had to wait a little longer to see Dad cry in person. Even after losing his own mother, he kept his tears in check. But sometimes the kindness of others can open the floodgates. In 2011, Michael Bublé came to Detroit just in time for my dad's birthday. He invited the Howe family to the concert and seated us front and center. In the middle of one of his songs, he literally stopped the band and said, "That's it. I just can't wait any longer. I am so excited to tell you all that we have an incredibly special guest here tonight. One of my biggest heroes, Detroit's own Mr. Hockey, Gordie Howe, is here with his family. And it just happens to be Gordie's 83rd birthday, so please join me in singing happy birthday to a true living legend." The spotlight found my dad, and Bublé and 15,000 of his Detroit fans serenaded Mr. Hockey. During the song, Michael made his way down from the stage to our seats with a huge cake illuminated with 83 candles. Later in the show, Michael dedicated the song Georgia to my mom. Then he looked down into the audience and asked, "Remember Gordy?" Years before, he had performed at an event for my parents, and my mom had loved that song. The loss of my mom in 2009 was still fresh in my dad's mind, and the floodgates burst. Mr. Hockey was gushing. The tears never seemed to end. To see Dad's longing for Mom, the still burly man crying his eyes out in front of thousands over the loss of his forever love, showed me a side of my father I'd never seen. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Murray Howe, thank you very much, sir, for tonight and for this book right here. I hope there are another 9 lessons there down the road. I think we have time for Q&A. Oh, right up front here, there we have a question. And are there people running around with microphones?
Yes, Colleen is a rather unusual name, and I wondered how you managed to have a mother and a wife named Colleen.
I was extremely fortunate. Sheer luck. My Colleen was the first Colleen I'd ever met, other than my own mother. And I met Colleen at University of Michigan, literally doing sit-ups in the Central Campus Recreation Building. So that was another great reason to exercise. And I was immediately taken with her because she was working out so hard and so disciplined. I said, wow, I've got to meet this girl because she works out as hard as I do. And I was so impressed. And when she said that her name was Colleen, I'm like, wow, my mom is going to love this girl. And the rest is history.
Yeah.
Actually, I have to mention one more thing. After I got to know her family, and there's a little bit of this in the book, her father was a huge Gordie Howe fan. Both of her parents were. And in 1961, just before she was going to be born, my dad scored a goal against Toronto to win that series. And Colleen's father said, you know, when that baby's born, if it's a boy, we're going to name him Gordy. And it was a girl, of course. And they randomly named her Colleen. So anyway, okay. I almost married my dad's namesake.
We have a question over yonder.
Years ago, when Gordie Howe was Grand Marshal of the Cherry Festival Parade, along with President Gerald Ford, I don't know who was the Grand Marshal, but they were both in the parade.
It was
Dad. That was the year that my husband played in the Walter Hagen tournament, along with Gordie Howe. And with President Ford, and he won that tournament. And he died a few months ago, but I really wanted to come tonight because as a kid growing up in Detroit, that's what we did. We went to the hockey games. But in any event, well, I was so excited because my husband won the tournament, and I was all dressed up waiting. We were going to be able to sit with Gordie Howe, and a friend came in and said, "Oh, this is so exciting. We get to have dinner with the president." I said, "The president? Forget the president. We get to have dinner with Gordie Howe." and her response was, "What kind of an American are you?"
Well, I think we got the high sign, and that's going to wrap it up here. So thank you all for being here. Thank you.
That was Murray Howe talking with Ron Jolly. Murray Howe's book is called 9 Lessons I Learned from My Father. Learn more about the National Writers Series and upcoming events at nationalwritersseries.org. And listen to past programs at interlochenpublicradio.org. For Interlochen Public Radio, I'm Linnea Milkerrick.